You're listening to the Humankind Well-Being Forum from humanmedia.org.
A person who has been diagnosed with cancer has a lot of questions and a lot of fear. And religious faith provides that person with a solid basis by which to chart the rest of the course of their life, however long that might be, and also derive meaning from the experience of cancer. So religious faith is a powerful coping behavior, and when people are diagnosed with cancer, they need something to help them to cope with the uncertainty about the future, the sense of loss of control, and the fear of their mortality and what will happen to their loved ones. And religion has the framework it has to do that. It's done it for millennia since humans, you know, became human. And so and it's also effective. It works for people.
And so take us into the mind or even the heart of someone who is facing the severity of a diagnosis of cancer. And help me understand how it is that by invoking a spiritual faith, that can help somebody to cope with that challenge.
When a person hears the diagnosis, you have cancer, the immediate thing that first comes to mind is that I'm going to die, and I'm going to die pretty soon. There is the fear of dying, of death. Religion helps people to cope with that because it says to them, you know, this is just part of life. Death is part of life. It's not the end. It's a transition to a place that is better. There is a place that one gets to meet the God that created one, one's ultimate creator, and to be reunited with loved ones that have passed previously. So it counteracts that fear, that anxiety that comes with the notion, okay, I'm dying, this life is over, it's ending. It gives people a sense of control, because that loss of control with cancer, that sense that there is something in my body that is taking over and that I can't do much about it. I can go see the doctors, and there may be some good treatments. I'm going to certainly pursue that, but this all is pretty overwhelming because this thing is trying to take my life. And what religion does, it says, okay, God is in control. God is in control. God loves you. God cares about you. He wants your best with or without this cancer. This cancer is nothing that God cannot handle. God is bigger than this cancer. No cancer can take your life unless God, it's part of God's plan for you, which is a good plan. That gives the person a sense of meaning and purpose in their life, and a sense that they don't have to be in control, that there is someone else in control that knows a lot better what they need to live the fullest possible life, both in this life and after they die.
And is it appropriate for a person who adopts that attitude of faith, nevertheless, to fight against their cancer, to try to stem its effects, to try to recover?
It is appropriate for a person to do everything humanly possible to fight the cancer, including taking the best of what medicine has to offer. Now, I think it is inappropriate to be desperate about it and to seek everything, you know, conceivable in a desperate way, because desperation and fear is not compatible with a strong religious faith or a trust and confidence that God is in control. But there is absolutely nothing inconsistent with such a faith in the person seeking the best treatments that are available, chemotherapy, radiation therapy, surgery, to try to stem this cancer, because there may be a big part of God's plan for that person that will occur through that treatment and after the treatment.
Could you explain that?
Well, God could use that person in touching other people with cancer. That person may experience a healing in their life because they have lived longer because of the chemotherapy. They may come to a new appreciation for life. Lots of things occur when a person is undergoing, you know, cancer, chemotherapy, or surgery, or radiation. There's a receptivity to things that are spiritual that may never have been there before, and certainly God would want that for the person, because I think ultimately God's desire is that we mature spiritually and we grow closer to Him and we grow more loving and caring and forgiving of others.
Well, that's a very interesting point you make, that sometimes being on the receiving end of medical treatment, particularly in a case of a life-threatening illness like cancer, that a person may develop greater receptivity to spirituality. How does that work?
Well, when people have their back against the wall and they're out of control, what do? They, you know, it's you know, my God is the first initial phrase that is experienced whenever anything traumatic happens to many people.
Oh my God.
It's not even thought about. It's an automatic response that we have. When we're completely out of control, there's nowhere else to turn, and people turn to prayer. I mean, that's why in the service, when you're being shot at, you know, what do? You start praying, because you don't have anything else. You shoot back, you know, you try to cover yourself. But once you've done that, what else do? You could become intolerably anxious. That's an alternative. But how do people deal with it? They pray.
When people do start out with a basic foundation of spiritual or religious faith, how do they tap into that while they're facing something as difficult as cancer?
Well, they use their faith probably like they've used their faith to encounter and to cope with other things in their life that have been traumatic, been out of their control. They would just mobilize their faith by praying, by reading the Bible to try to get some answers from Scripture. Praying to God, maybe going to church and talking to their pastor or talking to members of their faith community that they trust. These are the kinds of things that people of faith do, automatically do those things whenever they encounter a major stressor.
How about for people who feel that, in a sense, God has let them down because now they're dealing with this very, very difficult illness?
There are a lot of people who feel that God has not answered their prayer. They've prayed for healing. They still have the cancer. They have a lot of pain. They've prayed for relief. They're not getting it. They wonder why. It's a natural response. God, are you punishing me? Job in the Bible, an entire book of the Bible is devoted to that situation, where a person's prayers were apparently going unanswered, and he got angry, very angry at God, and tried to figure out what was happening. So this is not an uncommon response.
So how about for those of us who are not quite as heroic as the prophet Job, what are some realistic approaches that people can take when feeling like the higher power that they have trusted doesn't seem to be protecting them in the way they had hoped?
Well, actually, Job wasn't all that heroic. He got extremely angry at God and asked him why he allowed him to become born and questioned God and did everything else that we typically do. So he was not a particular saint in his response to what happened to him. But what can people do? People, first of all, this is not an easily solved question of why God, why me? God, are you punishing me? People with those feelings, those natural, normal feelings, should not feel guilty over having those feelings. But they should seek counsel from either a pastoral counselor, someone who is trained in this, not just a pastor, but a pastoral counselor or a chaplain who can help the person get over this, get through this, so that they can then rely on their faith as a source of support rather than as an object of anger.
Support rather than an object of anger.
Yes, because when people are angry at God and they're sick, they will die sooner and they will die more unhappily. That has been shown from research.
Is it a matter of coming to terms, finding some mode of acceptance rather than kind of going down in some indignation?
Well, it's about talking it through. It's not really, when people say, God, why me? Are you punishing me? They're not looking really for an answer to that question. What they're doing is they're saying, oh, this is horrible, what I'm going through. I feel so alone. I don't feel God's presence. I'm trying to make sense of this. This is just so painful. I just don't know if I can stand it any longer. It's a cry, an outcry of somebody who is suffering. That's usually the case. And the response to that is to let that person talk about these feelings. Let them get it out and not feel guilty about it or feel bad about it. Say, this is normal. It's okay to feel this way. God understands. You know, God understands. God is not going to kick you out because you are angry at him. I mean, he didn't kick out Job. He just said to Job, Job, you don't see the whole picture. You're looking at this from a human standpoint. I see all of eternity, past, present, future, and I have more information than you do. Just trust in me. Trust in my wisdom.
Trust in the process.
Yes. Trust in the fact that God is in control and things are going to be okay.
Something that you said a moment ago that seems very significant to me is that, understandably, many people who are experiencing a grave illness feel very alone. And to what extent do you think the faith experience can help to reduce some of that sense of loneliness?
The sense of loneliness is very common among people with chronic illness, and particularly with severe illness. Nobody really understands. People don't really understand. They've not been through it typically. And so it becomes a real challenge because you are kind of in your world going through something that you can't really connect with other people. Now, other people who have gone through that experience, they can understand. And so, you know, seeking out those people is important. But the support of there's two supports that religion provides. One is the support from God, the fact that God is always there. God has promised us never to leave us. No matter where we go, even when we're angry at him, he's still there. He loves us. He loves us unconditionally and wants the best for us. And so he's there. We can talk to him. And knowing that God is there helps people to feel less alone. There is also the faith community. The faith community that is committed to loving their neighbor. It's part of the belief system to love and care for your neighbor. So you have people who want to help, who need to help for their own spiritual growth, coming and helping and providing assistance to the person with cancer. So both the faith community's support and the support from God, apart from the faith community and apart from family or others, are two very important sources of support.
Some of your research has looked at the effect on people's health of participating in a spiritual congregation. What have you found?
We found that people who are part of a spiritual congregation, who are actively involved in that congregation, have better physical health, they live longer, they have better mental health, and it's especially true for those who are actually volunteering within that congregation, and not just going to church once a week or once a month, but actually being part of that congregation, caring for their neighbors within that congregation. That has been associated with greater well-being, greater meaning and purpose, and better physical health and greater longevity.
And does any of this apply to people who honestly feel they don't believe in God?
I think the person who's adamant and convinced and not open to believing in God has the option of believing that their life terminates when they die and that there's nothing after that for all of eternity. They have that option. That is the option for the person who adamantly is closed to the notion that God exists, that God cares, that there is any spiritual realm out there. But that's not necessary. It's not necessary to die in an insane asylum like Friedrich Nietzsche did. It's the person who is rational, I think, keeps an open mind. They may not be absolutely convinced. They may have questions about whether God exists and, you know, all of this. This is all made up just for people's comfort. But they remain open, and they look around them, and they see who is really doing the best, who is making a difference in the world, who is doing the good things. If they see that spiritual people are doing those things, then it may be worthwhile to be open to the notion that God may exist, that there may be a spiritual reality out there that is as real as this material reality.
And are you equating spiritual belief with being active in a particular religion, or can it be a non-religious spiritual faith?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because I'm not sure that I really believe that there is a non-religious spiritual activity, because I think that my words religion and spirituality really kind of mean the same. Not everybody agrees with me on this, I realize.
Well, what I mean is there's an awful lot of people I know who feel, in effect, that they were burned by early life experiences in an organized religious community. And they're not necessarily throwing the baby out with the bathwater. They're not necessarily denying the possibility that a higher power exists. But they really are very uncomfortable with organized religion.
Well, the way I use the term religion, of course, is not just institutional religion. I would include the people you described in the religious category, but they would be just non-organizationally religious.
I see.
So we're dealing with semantics here to some extent, but I think that a person who has a connection or a desire to have a connection or to better understand or to seek out some connection with that which is transcendent, that which is outside of himself or herself, whether that be God, whether that be Allah, whether that be ultimate truth for the Buddhist, or whatever it is for the Hindu as well, because God is, you know, there is a great God, or for the Native American, the great spirit, that there is a desire to connect with that great spirit, that great truth. That, I think, is the important thing. Now, you can have a very religious person who's just going to church who has no desire to connect, you know, to God, to that which is ultimate, etc. There are plenty of people like that, too. And I'm not sure I would call those people religious. I'm not sure that just going to church makes you religious.
It's the interior experience of opening up to this transcendent realm.
Yes. Yes, that's very well put. One of the fallacies is that, you know, I have cancer because I wasn't religious or spiritual enough. I didn't pray enough, therefore I got cancer. And then people feel guilty about that, because naturally, if research shows that people are healthier and die less often with cancer if they are more religious, then it must be that I'm not religious or I'm not spiritual. That is an inappropriate application of logic, because there are other causes for cancer besides how religious or spiritual one is.
I always feel like we live in such a toxic environment where the food and the water and the air are all contaminated. And it would be easy even for practically somebody walking on air to nevertheless come into contact with carcinogens.
That is absolutely true. And genetically, you know, most cancers have a major genetic component. So it's the environment, the genetics of it. There are all sorts of causes for cancer, and you know, everything being equal, if you could control for all that, probably the religious person would develop cancer less often, because they probably wouldn't smoke as much, and, you know, they probably live a healthier lifestyle, etc. But You can't conclude that just because somebody has cancer that they don't. In fact, many people don't develop a deep religious faith until they experience the cancer. So what I've seen most of the time is that people with cancer are deeply spiritual people. And it wasn't because they weren't spiritual, they developed the cancer because they had other issues. Because there was genetics, there was toxic environments, there were other people smoking or other, you know, there was the environment and the genetics working together and their own aging process.
Dr. Harold G. Koenig, professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University Medical Center, thank you very much. You've been listening to the Humankind Well-Being Forum. I'm David Freudberg. For more information and to learn about Walking Through the Storm, our radio documentary project for cancer survivors, please go to humanmedia.org. Thank you for listening.